Nobody wakes up in the morning and says, you know what, I'm going to go be a sterile processing tech and I'm going to do a really crummy job today. You know, we learn from those who train us. And maybe it was that way 10, 15 years ago, and we haven't really looked at the manufacturer's guidelines. We haven't stayed up to date on evidence-based practices such as your AAMI guidelines, your AORN guidelines. It's kind of evolved that with that additional knowledge, they started uncovering processes that were broken, and with those came more findings.
Beyond Clean offers a creative look into the inner workings of a healthcare industry committed to getting it right. Every instrument, every time. Join us every week as we explore the hidden world of one of the most important aspects of safe surgical care. And now your hosts, Michael Matthews, Hank Balch, and Justin Poulin.
This week on Beyond Clean, we speak with Jenny Mandarino, Director of Accreditation for LifeCare Oklahoma and Arkansas with Vizient. Jenny has been a nurse for 25 years, and the first half of her career was spent at the bedside and then in various leadership positions. Her last role in the hospital was as a chief nursing officer for over 8 years. Ms. Mandarino has her master's degree in nursing administration, and for the last 10 years, she has been a director of accreditation services, in which she works with hospitals in various territories to achieve regulatory compliance. Currently, she is with LifeCare Oklahoma and Arkansas and supports 29 hospitals with their accreditation needs. She works with hospitals that are Joint Commission CMS, DNV, and HFAP. Ms. Mandarino sits on one of the Joint Commission's advisory boards, where she is able to give input on what is happening in her hospitals. The services she offers her organizations are pre-survey mock surveys, constant communication about regulatory changes, customized education programs, policy and procedure reviews, as well as going on-site when the surveys show up at each of her organizations. She also works with her hospitals after surveys to assist with writing plans of correction. Hank, Mike, I'm excited to talk to Jenny. I know that this is always a hot button for any department out there preparing for surveys. I know you guys spend years preparing for surveys, and how do you stay on top of survey requirements? They're certainly getting a lot more savvy as far as it relates to sterile processing.
Almost from the first time that we kicked off the podcast, I've had folks ask me, when are you going to do a Joint Commission episode? When are you going to do a Joint Commission episode? It really is front and center of the day-to-day sterile processing work. Yes, we're worrying about our patients, our surgeries, our teams, but in the back of our mind, we know in a couple of months or a couple of years, we're going to have a team coming down here making sure that we're doing it the right way every tray, every time. I'm super excited to talk to Jenny today about how to make that happen.
Yeah, guys, and I've had the genuine fortune of getting to work with Jenny previously when we were opening our hospital. Jenny was our accreditation consultant as we were preparing for our initial accreditation, and she is just a real delight and a fountain of knowledge. She's been through dozens, probably if not hundreds, of surveys at this point in her career, and I know that in particular she has a very specific passion for sterile processing and a lot of great knowledge for that area, so this is really going to be a good show.
HealthMark has intelligent solutions for your cleaning verification program, including products to measure water temperature, water quality, cleaning efficacy, and directly test for residual soil left on instruments. Find your tools for cleaning verification at hmark.com. There you will learn about our TOSI and SonoCheck that test the performance of mechanical washers as recommended in sterilization standards guidelines. Other products like CartWash Check test for mechanical efficiency and target temperature. The ProCheck 2 can detect residual protein to a very low level. Go to hmark.com today for all of your cleaning verification testing needs.
It's 2023, and there's big news for IST. A closed warning letter, a new product launch, and a 10-year anniversary. One Tray IST has a lot to celebrate this year. One Tray's 2006 cleared 48-hour storage claim was acknowledged by the FDA, and the company is pushing forward offering the total solution for reprocessing. One tray maximizes reprocessing time. EasyTrax adds flexibility with instrument organization, and their upcoming product, One Cart, a sealed case cart with a smaller footprint and a perfect option for offsite sterilization, completes the total solution. Experience a year of efficiency with One Tray. For more information on the closure of the warning letter, visit onetray.com/FDA warning letter. That's onetray.com/FDA warning letter. Otherwise, you can reach out to the company by calling 937-619-0138 or visit onetray.com/contact.
Joining us now is Jenny Mandarino, Director of Accreditation at Vizient. Jenny, thank you for coming on the show.
Well, thank you for having me.
I think today's episode is going to be one of great interest for our listeners. Give us an overview of the Joint Commission survey process and the philosophy to set the table.
Well, let me start by saying that the Joint Commission, or CMS, the standards that are in their manuals are minimum requirements. So again, you have to remember that that's your minimum set. The purpose of the standards is that you're focusing on providing a safe, quality healthcare environment to your patients. And by this, they use a tracer methodology. When you use a tracer methodology, it's all about tracing patients through the health system. And through that tracer system, of course, we have all kinds of instrumentation that comes through sterile processing, and that's how they view that on survey. The philosophy, again, is all about continuously improving public health care. And their latest slogan is leading the way to zero, which is zero harm. And sterile processing is one of those areas that is considered high risk. The jobs of the folks in there are incredibly important to preventing and spreading infections in our healthcare system today.
Along those lines, it seems like there is a lot more emphasis coming through Joint Commission specific to sterile processing, and then especially when considering flexible endoscope reprocessing. Is that what you're seeing as you do all of your consultations?
I've been doing this job for 10 years, doing mock surveys and prepping hospitals for Joint Commission surveys, and it's probably been about 3 or 4 years ago we started seeing a trend of where hospitals were getting adverse survey decisions, even up to the point of immediate jeopardy in your sterile processing departments. And it kind of came out of nowhere and a shock to folks. Well, with that, you know, about the same time, the news, the media, you saw where folks were having infections with endoscopes. Maybe it was dental equipment not being processed correctly, or just basic surgical instruments not being processed correctly. So what happened at that point was CMS is, of course, always going to be the driver and said, you know, all of the accrediting bodies, including Joint Commission, you need to educate your staff on more of the in-depth processes and things to look for in the sterile processing and surgical area, including high-level disinfections such as your endoscopes and laryngoscope blades. So they became more educated, and with that education came a lot more findings, which came accumulation of adverse accreditation decisions, and why that's why we've seen this increased focus in the last 3 or 4 years.
Jenny, you say increased focus, and I know you said that they're becoming educated as a surveying team specific to sterile processing and endo. What else does that increased focus mean? Are they spending more time in our sterile processing departments? Are they going there first? Like, that's the quote that you're kind of hearing out there now, is the first place that they're going to go when they hit the door is down to the endo department. Is that what you're seeing in reality?
Yes, absolutely. For many, many years, it's like they knew to kind of do a walkthrough, but nobody really knew the in-depth of what to look for, whether it was your process challenge devices, whether it was the manufacturer's instructions for use on the equipment. The more detailed training they received, the more in-depth it became. They are spending more time down there, including looking at your environment. You'll have two surveyors You'll have a clinician that will make an initial round in the environment, and you'll also have your life safety and your engineering expert surveyor who will be making rounds in the environment, looking at additional things such as your temperature, humidity, your positive and negative air pressures, all which, if those types of things are incorrect, can get you a condition level finding fairly easy.
Jenny, you mentioned that there was a lot more education, and typically education is overcoming a fear. Do you think that some of the surveyors were intimidated by the department? Because I know it can be intimidating to walk into with all the regulations and all the guidelines and air exchanges and everything that they have to pay attention to. Do you think that was a big emphasis for increasing their knowledge base around the department?
Absolutely. Once they became more knowledgeable, you know, they say knowledge is power. And it really became a powerful tool. And the more that they learned, the more that they found that folks were not following the manufacturer's guidelines, or we've been doing it this way forever. Nobody wakes up in the morning and says, you know what, I'm going to go be a sterile processing tech and I'm going to do a really crummy job today. Nobody says that. You know, we learn from those who train us. And maybe it was that way 10, 15 years ago. And we haven't really looked at the manufacturer's guidelines. We haven't stayed up to date on evidence-based practices such as your AIMI guidelines, your AORN guidelines. It's kind of evolved that with that additional knowledge, they started uncovering really processes that were broken. And with those processes came more findings. Again, the bottom line is they uncovered, again, that we've trained the trainer who's trained the next person who's trained the next person, and we've missed some gaps in staying up to date on those evidence-based guidelines and practices.
Talking about the way things have changed in recent years, I had a survey, and I won't name the agency, but I had a surveyor come down, and they walked up to the red line in my sterile processing department, you know, scanned around for a couple of seconds and said, all right, looks good. Cool. And, you know, Walked out of the door, and all my staff, you know, huge sigh of relief, yay, it's done. And I'm standing there like, what did we just spend the last 3 years doing to show off all the quality initiatives and everything that we've been working on to have somebody just turn around and say, it looks good? How that was, you know, past years, but I've had surveys since that time where you're right. It's not a poke your head in kind of survey anymore. They're looking at documentation. They're looking at equipment. They're opening your autoclave to see what it looks like inside. That's some detail, and it's good detail. It means these folks are truly walking hand in hand with department leaders now and not the other direction for whatever reason.
It's about doing the right thing and providing that oversight and helping you find gaps and risks in your own processes. That's what it's really about, is making your environment safer for your patients. It always boils back to zero harm, patient safety.
You know, it's funny you mentioned that, Hank. I had a very similar experience right after I became manager at my first hospital. We had a surveyor come through. It was a really big deal. And the surveyor just kind of walked through and walked out, and I said the same thing. I said, you know, was that it? And I was just about to run down the hall and tell him to get back in there and give us a proper survey, because we worked really hard at this. Turned out that he was just the life safety guy. So all he was looking for was the airflows. It's funny, because that kind of attitude about trying to step up our game and be excited about a joint commission inspection is completely different. And it actually kind of made some waves with hospital administration. So, Jenny, my question for you is, with all of this increased focus on sterile processing, is that increased focus coming from the Joint Commission, is that kind of making its way into increasing sterile processing's place with hospital administrations?
It has definitely got their attention and has been good for sterile processing that they've been able to, when they see that these kinds of things, again, nobody wakes up and says, I'm going to do the wrong thing. They just keep doing what they've been told to do. That it's about putting the resources where those resources need to be. And for years, you know, maybe it's just education. We have seen this huge gap in education. Your sterile processing techs, they received a competency when they came on. I've seen employee files where the tech's been there 25, 30 years, and they had their initial competency, but we haven't updated those competencies and done those annually. Again, all of that, I see administration putting far more resources in to making sure that they're doing the right things. They have the training that they need. They have the leadership or somebody that is overseeing this high-risk process that knows what they're doing.
So, Jenny, you talk about increased focus, and then you have a survey team that has an increased comfort level, education, expertise, mm-hmm. particular to the sterile processing space. This is impacting administrators because they know it's coming now. How are hospitals then focusing their efforts to prepare for this kind of survey at the higher level?
There's several ways that I've seen them focus their efforts. Some of them choose to bring in consultants who basically do a gap analysis between the rules and the manufacturer's instructions for use to see where you're missing anything in between. Maybe you're not up to speed. Again, re-educating staff or getting good, solid education basis for staff. You know, the guidelines at this point don't state that you have to be certified, but they're definitely heading in that direction. And so focusing efforts on getting people certified in this job. Another area is having somebody over the area, as I said, that is knowledgeable in the sterile processing area, because traditionally the model I have seen through my 25 years of being a nurse is that the OR manager has been assigned over sterile process, but they've not had the education to know what they're really even looking at when they go through the department to do that oversight, to do that double checking of those critical points. That's a huge focus. Certification is probably one of the biggest that I'm seeing people give them the resources to get them certified or have plans for certification in the near future.
Yeah, what's great about the certification options out there is they don't stop at the technician level. You can get certified as a specialist in instrumentation. They have healthcare leadership certifications now through HMA and CBSPD. We had on in one of our earlier episodes, Jim Stabinski from the CCI Institute that does certifications for CNORs. And, you know, one of his big visions is to continue to fill the gap you're referencing with these OR nurses who sometimes, you know, facilities too small maybe to have a dedicated manager in sterile processing, but you still do need to have some kind of oversight and understanding about what's going on. And just having an RN behind your name doesn't necessarily mean that you know what you need to know to lead that department well. And so there's a movement in all of these interdisciplinary areas to say, how can we share the knowledge, all value the same areas that need to be valued, and then laser focus on those gaps. And I'm so glad that you brought up the gap with IFUs and the reality in the department of, do you even have the type of equipment that you need at this IFU says, or the type of brushes or cleaning detergent? So many opportunities out there just fall through the cracks. And I was wondering if you could speak just real briefly on what those gap analyses entail at the facility level.
Well, let's start with the environment. All surfaces have to be cleanable. It can be the basics of, you know, these folks are looking at this every day and it doesn't strike them as different or bad. You have an outside set of eyes that comes in and does this gap analysis where an outside set of eyes sees, oh gosh, well, you know, this drywall is exposed over here. That's not a cleanable surface. Or, hey, look at the bottom of your packing table. You know, it's got rust on it or dust. Sometimes if somebody doing a very critical look, and it's uncomfortable, trust me, it's uncomfortable when somebody comes in with this critical eye, but it's so important because it's hard for us to have a critical eye with ourselves because we look at the environment every day. The second thing is looking at the products that you're using. You know, are you using the products appropriately? I don't know how many times I've asked a staff member, what is the purpose of an enzymatic? And how many times I get the response that it's a cleaning agent. Well, it's not. It's to break down the bioburden, the proteins, and again, understanding what they're really for, or using disinfectant incorrectly, about really understanding the products. We think that we mix our products according to the manufacturer. You'd be surprised at how many don't mix it according to the manufacturer. They measured it maybe once 8 years ago, and they think that the bottle hasn't changed. You're following basically a recipe. If you have to have this much of this product to this much water, to make sure that it's doing the job it's supposed to do. You mentioned looking at brushes. You know, brushes, are they getting decontaminated daily? What types of brushes? Are the brushes made for the type of instrumentation that you have, or are they going to Walmart and buying some brushes because, or toothbrushes because they're cheap? They maybe don't have the right bristle that the manufacturer says you should use. Gaps in your personal protective equipment. Are people wearing the appropriate PPE? Are they covering facial hair? Are they following those policies and procedures? The gap analysis also goes outside of the sterile processing area because the instruments, it's just as important of what happens to those instruments at the point of use at the bedside. Do you have a consistent process, a consistent expectation of how those instruments are being handled at the point of use? And they're all being done the same to come into the department. It stretches beyond just the department. Gaps in the documentation. Here's another perfect example of surveyors years ago said, oh, you got a logbook, good, you're good. But they didn't know what they were really looking at. They didn't know that biological indicators, the devices have to have matching lot numbers. You know, you can't have a control with a different lot number than the product that you're using. So things like that of looking with a critical eye, that's hard to sometimes do in your own camp.
Jenny, you make a couple references to recent podcasts. We had Lindsay Brown on to talk about brushes probably a couple of months ago. And then just 2 weeks ago, we spoke with Sarah Freiberg. And a big part of that conversation was around proper dilution of enzymatic, which I'm really glad you brought up because it really can't be stressed enough. That's a very common misunderstood that more is better scenario, and it leaves a film of a, as you mentioned, a chemical that breaks proteins down, and we can leave that film on flexible scopes and instrumentation as well. So I'm happy to hear you saying that, and I think it's really important that everybody in the department is survey ready. We're going to talk a little bit about that in segment two, so everybody stay tuned, and we'll be right back with Jenny Mandarino, Director of Accreditation at Vizient. We are speaking with Jenny Mandarino, Director of Accreditation at Vizient. Jenny, we left off the last segment talking about Joint Commission readiness, but I think one of the things that Hank and Mike had talked about is spending 3 years getting prepared for their survey, wanting to show off their good work. But then at the same time, they talk about preparing for 3 years for the survey. Is a state of constant survey readiness a reality for sterile processing? Do you think that that is something that is a possibility?
Yes, I definitely have seen some organizations and worked with some who do stay in that state of readiness. I'll tell you some of the strategies, though, that keep them ready are that proper oversight that I've talked about, of having somebody who knows what they're watching for, who watches the quality of the program, the quality of the processes. One of the things that I have definitely learned in this last 10 years of doing this is that I don't take anybody's word for anything they tell me. I want to see it myself. And we've become a culture of, well, we told them to do it and they say they're doing it. But when we actually put our eyes on it and we look at what's actually being done, whether it's documentation, whether it's being how they do the process, that they're not doing it correctly. It goes back to that oversight piece, of having somebody that's knowledgeable in the process to keep them continuously ready, as well as keeping them up to date on the education, or what are the newest evidence-based guidelines. You know, leadership, again, has a huge role in this, of giving them the resources to do this very, very important job and keeping them ready. You shouldn't wait for the guy next door to have a bad survey outcome before you decide to do the right thing. Following those manufacturer's guidelines, and I say that 1,000 times a day in my hospital. What does the manufacturer say? And again, people don't know, and it's important that they do know what those are.
We've talked about administrators in the first section, and we've talked about the surveyors, obviously, themselves. But another key piece to this is infection control and quality, obviously. And I've noticed in a number of facilities, just like the surveyor culture is changing with the comfort level and engagement in SPD, you're also seeing infection control practitioners spend more time in SPD. They will have those topics come up at their statewide conferences. I think Mike actually spoke at the Arkansas APEC conference here recently, and those kinds of things are creeping up in such a critical department in the hospital that can come alongside these SPD departments and help ensure that constant readiness, because you've got someone with the skill set and that fresh set of eyes like you're talking about to help to partner with that department to stay ready.
You're exactly right. And before 3 or 4 years ago, for an infection control practitioner to round in the department, they would maybe walk through, but they didn't know what they were really looking at. And over time, I mean, I've created my own checklist of what should an infection control practitioner be looking at when they are going through the department. And when I'm doing mock surveys, doing rounds, I take them with me and I say, this is critical, this is critical, this is critical. These are the things that you need to look at. Because nobody's taken the time before a few years ago to really educate them on what they were looking at. And once they understand it, they're like, yes, oh my gosh, this is important. Definitely getting your infection control practitioners involved and understanding the process has been very, very important.
You know, Jenny, most people spend their time absolutely dreading when the Joint Commission comes through, and you're somebody who deals with it, you know, on a weekly basis for a living. With your experience, I wondered if there was any way you could just give us sort of a top couple of hit list items that you see are the kind of the most common findings for surveys in SPD.
Probably the most common, I'm going to have to go with the chemicals being mixed incorrectly, proper attire, because we think, well, we're not going to dress exactly like we're supposed to today. Your air pressures, you know, your decontam not being in negative, or the window pass-through windows wide open because they want to listen to music on both sides. The last year and a half, lot numbers have become a very critical piece of looking. Are you documenting the lot numbers of, you know, whether it's your process challenge devices, whether it's your chemicals, because in the event of a recall, how would you trace back that item or what it was used on? And then, believe it or not, the amount of expired process challenge devices that we'll run across, whether it's ultrasonic, you know, Sonocheck or whatever product they're using, that they don't look at the actual expiration dates on them. A lot of it has to do with the documentation, definitely.
And so kind of along those same lines, what are the findings that you're seeing that maybe might not be as common but represent kind of that greatest threat, the ones that kind of would make the headlines?
They're definitely going to be you don't have matching lot numbers for your biological indicators, that you're using two different batches, or that you're not doing the biological indicators at all or as often as you should be. The other big one is the use of immediate use sterilization. And are you using it appropriately? Are you using it inappropriately because that's what your physicians want? They have demand. Early releases of devices and items that shouldn't have an early release. Not following your own policies and procedures can be a big one. And sometimes it won't be just one really big thing. It'll be an accumulation of a lot of these small things that can lead to an adverse decision, because they look to see that your processes are hardwired in what you're doing. Again, it goes back to that continual state of readiness. When you've got hardwired processes, they know that you are continually ready and you're not ramping up just for the show.
Is what you're talking about now causes for immediate jeopardy, or is that a different category of potential findings?
Lots of little things can roll up into an immediate jeopardy. The ones that I have seen in the most recent years have, again, gone back to the biologicals or expired process challenge devices, and surveyors are saying, well, your process challenge device expired 18 months ago, so you really can't prove to me that the item was processed correctly, and you need to go back and do a recall of everybody that's ever received, you know, the instruments or were run with this particular lot number of process challenge device to, again, implants, you know, immediate use sterilization of implants because the doctor demanded it. It can just be so many things, but those are the big things that stick out in my mind.
I know one of the areas that folks who are interested maybe in seeing this play out in a real life scenario, back to Mike's earlier point, for the facilities that hit the news, occasionally, especially if they're a government institution, you can access some of those findings, if it's CMS findings, and read through the actual report to see in living color, if you will, you know, what those findings were. And I know one of the areas, and this is outside of SPD, but so related to it, is that point of use processing, as you said, at the bedside. Again and again and again, if you're finding bioburden issues in the OR, it's starting at the bedside and it's falling through there and it's not getting caught in SPD, then it's going back up to the OR. But that link in the chain is continual, and you see it on this documentation from some of these facilities that have just had major issues. So, yeah, that's a great point. And that information's out there for anyone to see.
It definitely is.
All right, well, now the moment everybody's been waiting for, the myths and misconceptions part of the interview, talking about SPD surveys and maybe some of the funny things that you've heard along the way, Jenny. We know that there's always a lot of misconceptions. I think there's a little bit of entertainment value here as well, but it goes back to what you said, knowing the instructions for use, what the manufacturer says, the guidelines, but I'm sure that we've always done it that way, or we've always done it this way, has created some unique commentary as you've gone around and helped people get ready for their survey.
You know, the biggest thing that I probably get hit with daily in my job is that, well, Jenny, we've been doing it that way for 10 years and nobody's ever said anything until you came along and or until the surveys came along. And again, you know, it's like, well, you're exactly right, but let me give you the reference and show you where it says this and how important it is. So again, one of the biggest, I guess it's a misconception, is that just because you've been doing it this way doesn't always make it right. And ask yourself, why are we doing it this way?
It's scary, Jenny, when you hear someone say that, because you reference with the process challenge device that's expired. If you've been doing it for 10 years this way, guys, we got some dangerous stuff happening here. Are you telling me that you haven't been processing this device correctly for 10 years? And when you reframe it like that, it doesn't become a matter of habit. It becomes a matter of safety. And then you start seeing those light bulbs go off like, oh, my gosh.
Yeah. You know, or the justification that, well, we received it from the manufacturer and it was expired. Well, that doesn't make it right either. So, you know, again, you're just as responsible as the end user of that product to make sure that it's viable and it's in use and you're doing it correctly. You know, I've run across all kinds of different things of how people have interpreted whether it may be a TOSI test, to how they log them, to how they don't log them. I had a situation where I was on the dirty side and I said, do you put your TOSI through the washer? And oh, yeah. And so I go to the clean side and then I asked him, I said, what do you ultimately do with it? And he goes, well, I throw it away. And so then I went on the clean side and I asked the guy who's pulling the clean stuff out, what are you doing with the little TOSI? How do you know that the washer worked? And he goes, well, I give it back to the guy on the other side. I said, well, that guy told me he just throws it away. And again, they had no idea that they weren't keeping it, they weren't logging it, they weren't doing what they were supposed to be doing. Been at a place where they were doing ultrasonic, you know, the quality control and the ultrasonic machines. And I said, so tell me how do you know that this is working appropriately? And the gal says, you know, well, about once a month we go to the kitchen and we get a piece of foil and we bring that piece of foil back, we put it in there, and if it comes out wrinkled, we're good. And I said, really? Okay. And tell me which evidence-based guideline that follows so I will know what so it can be a wide variety of things that you hear. It can just be sometimes crazy. And again, they truly think that that's what they've been taught, so that's what they're doing.
Yeah.
And it's okay.
Going to that point about evidence-based guidelines or just recommendations in general, like the AMI ST79 document, 1091 if you're dealing with the scopes. But the fact that I'd say 80% of sterile processing departments in the country probably have that book on the shelf, but a very small percentage of that, the books don't have dust on them. And so one of the challenges, even from the sterile processing leadership side, is get your people in that book. If there is a book that you're going to spend time reading as a leadership team or as a technician during your onboarding, yes, certification is great. It's important. Got to go that route. But you also need to be looking at these other guidelines and recommendations to really drive that level of expertise. Just like the ultrasonic testing, as you brought up, how do you know, how would you know that the tin foil test is not a recommended test? If you're not reading the documents, you wouldn't know.
Exactly. And even though, and here's another one, is that the argument that I'm on Deacon Tam, and the Deacon Tam department is, I've been in some that are absolutely filthy. And they're like, well, it's a dirty room. And I said, it is a dirty room, but at the end of the day, it has to be a clean room. And so you're going to treat it just like you do the clean side. And it's just the misconceptions about the purpose of the room. Well, it's a dirty room, so it can stay dirty. Well, no, it can't. And all of that's clearly in your evidence-based guidelines of things to follow. And people traditionally don't have the time to sit there and read these wonderful documents, but they need somebody to help interpret and educate. And when those documents change, like, their ST79 just came out with a new version last year, what were the changes in that? Well, the washer checks went from weekly to now daily. And some of those other key components that I find that people don't have the access to, or the references, or my organization won't buy it because it's too expensive. That goes back to your leadership issues of providing the staff with what they need to do their jobs.
All right, Jenny. Well, I wanted to thank you for coming on the show. That's all really good insight. I know we had a little fun with it there at the end, and it is funny. I think part of that, though, and even the tinfoil, it used to be something that people did in the absence of any type of testing. It's just carried on, and that's a perfect example of what you were describing. We've always done it this way. Well, there are things that have been done a certain way, but there are better ways now, and we have to continue to grow in the profession, and there's new recommendations, and there's always constant advancements. And that's probably really what we kicked off segment two about. It's a great way to reemphasize survey readiness is not a state of perfection that you attain and then you're all set and don't have to worry about it for 5 or 7 years. It's something that you have to keep up with the guidelines and recommendations on an ongoing basis. And so I think, this podcast and you coming on is one of the great ways to stay on the cutting edge and get new information and make sure that people are staying ahead of the curve and staying survey ready.
Well, thank you for having me. I really appreciate the opportunity, and thank you again.
That was Jenny Mandarino, Director of Accreditation at Vizient. I'll tell you guys, I think the thing that is the most encouraging for me is that the Joint Commission is raising the focus for hospital administration, and specifically shining a light on sterile processing department leaders. I think it's important that the higher this goes, the more credibility really for resources for the department and necessary staffing measures to run a fully functional department.
Yeah, Justin, you're absolutely right. That was great. And I know that just from listening to, the myth section, there's still an awful lot of work to be done. But as Jenny said, the constant survey readiness is, it is possible. There are departments out there that are doing it just by taking it one step at a time and really focusing on certain key things. It can become a reality.
The thing that jumped out to me primarily in this interview was the expired chemicals and matching those lot numbers. I know we kind of breezed over that as one of the many findings, but I'll tell you, there's a lot of stuff in our departments that have lot numbers on them, and we're not documenting them all consistently, and we're also not necessarily understanding the importance of those lot numbers when it comes down to quality. And in some sense, having our technicians comfortable and confident enough to speak to a surveyor and educate the surveyor about these particular items. So I was glad that she got to bring up all of that tonight, and yeah, just had a wonderful time.
That's another episode in the books. As a reminder, you can help support us by subscribing to Beyond Clean on iTunes and Stitcher. We'd certainly appreciate a rating and a review because your feedback is important to the show. And if you do have any topics that you'd like us to cover on a future episode, or if you'd like to share a picture anonymously on our Instagram page, just send an email to info@beyondclean.net. On behalf of Hank, Mike, and myself, thank you for listening to another edition of Beyond Clean.